You're listening to the Whole Hog Football Podcast, sponsored by Bud Anderson Home Services, bringing you the latest news, position analysis, and more. Here's your hosts, Matt Jones and Scotty Bordelon.
Arkansas's 37-0 loss at Georgia was a little bit of an eye-opener, not only from a Razorback standpoint, but just how good Georgia is. I think we all knew this was a really good Georgia team. Obviously, they're very talented, and when you get their focus, it can be a really long day for the opposition. I don't think there are a lot of teams in college football who can play with Georgia this season. Matt Jones, joined by Scotty Bordelon of WholeHogSports.com and Clay Henry of Hogs Illustrated. Clay, you were there in Athens. I've always thought that Sanford Stadium has been a little bit of an underrated atmosphere, and from all indications, they really brought it on Saturday when the Razorbacks were in town.
Arkansas compounded the problem by not making a play in the first quarter. I mean, the entire first quarter. And it was you can quiet the crowd. And once you make a play offensively or defensively or do something to, bring momentum to your sideline, you can do things to bring things in order, so to speak. But they didn't, and it just got louder and louder.
Georgia is so good on the line of scrimmage, and I think we knew that going into the game. We talked about how A&M and Georgia were going to be really the first two tests for Arkansas in terms of physicality, line of scrimmage type games. That's not to really take anything away from Texas, but I think we all agree that Texas just isn't the same type of team on the line of scrimmage that A&M and Georgia is. Arkansas passed the test against A&M, but we said this last week, Georgia's just a different animal, and it was really eye-opening seeing those linemen, standing up next to Arkansas's linemen. I said this after the game on Saturday, Georgia is the model, I think, of where Sam Pittman wants to take his program. It's just going to take a few years to get to that point, if they ever get to that point, where they have those type of linemen, not only on the front line, but the thing about Georgia is that they can rotate them in too, especially on defense.
And they roll those defensive linemen in waves, and you're not going to find a better starting front than Georgia this year. They have been, I think, hands down the most overwhelming thing in the sport. And it started like Jordan Davis. I think, I've watched Georgia play earlier in the year, probably more against Clemson than any other game. But Jordan Davis, he's superhuman. Like, he's an extraterrestrial, like 6'6 and 360. And then you really knew Arkansas was going to be in for a long day, before they snapped the ball the first time with a couple of penalties that they picked up. But when Jordan Davis gobbled up Traylon Smith, off left tackle, that was jarring to me. And, they've got so much talent back behind him that, he can go that hard for several plays at a time before he needs a rest. And, that's the standard right now. And Arkansas does have improved depth on this defensive line, but they've still, got a ways to go. I was really impressed, too, with their linebacker play. Like, you shouldn't, as a human being, be able to run that well at that size. And I think it's N'Kobe Dean. He's unbelievable, too. I think he's, one of the top 10 graded out linebackers on Pro Football Focus. And then you throw in all those other guys on the defensive line. They're pretty tough. So Arkansas knew it was – had an uphill battle to climb going in, but that was pretty eye-opening.
One of the things that I always watch for is, can you get pressure without blitzing? And now they did bring Dean a couple of times, but they dropped a lineman. They never brought more than four. They were bringing a zone blitz, and they could overwhelm Arkansas's offensive line. And it was telling because Arkansas did not have time to really run their double route moves or to do anything to get guys open deep. I don't think KJ even looked deep in the first three quarters. It was in the very end of the game, Hornsby threw a deep pass, and that's been the staple of the offense. If the running game's not really working, you've got that deep ball to get a defense on their heels, and that wasn't going to happen in that game. And you run straight at Georgia and you get nothing. You go wide, you lose five. So pick your poison. It's going to be bad either way. And I think, you know, there'll be some teams that maybe have some girth in their offensive line and it can neutralize some of those linemen a little bit, but Arkansas isn't there yet. And it's an indication of that is, okay, we've got these offensive guards that came to campus as 270-pound guys, and we've really worked hard to get them up to 305. Well, Sam is going to go to what Sam does, and that is take some guys that are 360 that they've got down to 350 and play them at offensive guard. I wondered when Crawford made it to campus if he wouldn't be better at right guard, and Jalen St. John might be better at left guard. And that looks like what we're going to see this week. And it may not be for the entirety of the Ole Miss game, but just going down the towards the end of the season when you've got you know, some bigger offensive lines staring at you, particularly Alabama, they might have to be getting these guys ready for that kind of a matchup.
Just to add to Clay's point about, you know, the downfield passing, I mean, that was – we didn't see just a whole lot of that, and I charted KJ's throws, and he only had three that traveled more than 10 yards downfield. You know, that's just – that's a case of that front seven getting, you know, really tremendous pressure. And then when KJ did have, you know, just enough time to survey the field, that secondary, you know, pretty much blanketed Arkansas's receivers.
On Crawford and St. John, it's not just Ole Miss this week. You know, Auburn comes to Fayetteville the week after. Auburn always has one of the best defensive lines, it feels like, that Arkansas sees every year. This may not be the, you know, the defensive line with, you know, Big Cat and Davidson and Brown and those types, but you always expect really strong physical defensive linemen from Auburn. And I thought it was interesting, Clay, to hear Pittman talk about just the thought process about trying out Jalen St. John and Tyquese Crawford at the guard positions this week. He said, we can't just, I'm paraphrasing, but basically it was, we can't just concede that we are less physical than these other teams. And I think it's really interesting to see that coaching come into play about how they're trying to make these midseason adjustments to when they do see an Alabama or an Auburn, or, you know, Pittman's talked about they believe they could see Georgia again with, you know, the things falling into place for them in the SEC championship game, that when they see these types of teams again, they don't want to be pushed around, that they feel like they can do some things along the lines that can give them a better chance.
Yeah, I've long thought that Sam Pittman's idea of playing football revolved around big guards. And when you saw that he went out and got Sebastian Tortola, who was 375, and, you know, loved Denver Kirkland at guard, and that's a 340-pound beast of a man.
I think they even played Dan Skipper at guard at one point.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where young players in the offensive line do best. They've got protection. They're not on an island. And, you know, maybe Crawford and St. John aren't quite ready to play tackle in the SEC. But with somebody playing on either side of them, and they've got somebody on either side of them to tell them what the plays are, or at least what the checks are, it's just a security blanket for playing young guys. And eventually you might bounce them out to tackle, and you're going to get Terry Wells ready at some point. He might be a guard. And then they've got some young players coming that really fascinate me in their commitment list as far as big high school players. I'm talking about 320-pound high school players that are probably, by the time they get to campus, they're going to be in the 340 range and, you know, I'm benching 450 and things like that. But it's he wants to play with big guards. And I, you know, Ken Hatfield told me the same thing, you know, with Freddie Childress and some of the others. He wanted big guards. And when you're running read option, you want to cover those guys up inside where they don't see the running back. And that's what you've got with these guys, as opposed to Limmer and Latham, who've really bulked up to get just barely over 300. You know, it's a different beast. You know, 40 pounds is a lot of weight. You don't want to give up any weight in there. Your offensive guards, you want to be able to keep that bull rush off your quarterback. And that's what was happening, is that they couldn't slow down the Georgia rush, and guys were just kind of plowing through their guards. And, you know, Ricky Stromberg is going to be the center. We know that, but he needs some double team help when they're playing these massive nose guards.
I think my main takeaway from listening to Sam Pittman on Monday is just that he's handling, you know, the result of Saturday really well, about as well as he could have. It's not smart to overreact to a game like Saturday, because Georgia is just a different animal. And, you know, you, at the same time, you can not overreact, and but you can make adjustments, you know, that will help you down the line, and, you know, help you compete the rest of the way in the league. Because you're not going to see, you know, outside of Alabama, you know, you're not going to see a team that talented, that physical, that nasty and mean defensively. But you can, you know, you can make some adjustments to make your team better. And, you know, there's already been some competition at the guard spot, at that right guard spot, with Ty Clary and Brady Latham there. And then, you know, we've seen Luke Jones and Brady Latham at left guard too. So, I mean, you're not super settled at either one of those spots. So why not, you know, try another guy that, you know, gives you a little bit more girth, you know, on the line.
Yeah. I think another thing to remember is that they may want Latham at right tackle instead of Wagner. And, you know, that you got to find somebody. They have not been happy with Luke Jones when he's played. He's the same size as those other guys. He's a mere 300 pounder. I can remember when 300 pounder was considered the gold standard for an offensive lineman. 350 is more the target now for some of these guys to play inside, because I was talking with Frank Ragnow a year ago, and he says, you know, he's playing an offensive line in the NFL, and he says they're all 330 or 340. And that's what Georgia's going to have. That's what, I guess that's what Kentucky has. And that, you know, that's the difference in Arkansas right now, is the huge human beings that are now playing in the line on both sides of the line.
Talking about midseason adjustments, Pittman also talked about they're going to look into possibly changing their punt protection scheme this week against Ole Miss. On Saturday, they had a punt blocked. It was the fourth time they've had a punt blocked in two seasons, the second time this year. Now, he said that not every punt block is the same. Against Rice, he said it was a mental error, I think, by Shane Clinton. He didn't say his name, but I think Shane Clinton was the one responsible for allowing that punt to be blocked against Rice. And then on Saturday against Georgia, he said there were two problems. He said, number one, Austin Nix, who is the right guard in that two-man shield in their punt, he reacted too late to block Dan Jackson, who was coming through and blocked the punt. And then he also said that Reed Bauer, the punter, was standing outside of, you know, the protection zone, was standing a little bit too far to the right, which allowed a little bit more of a free run to him. And so, again, it just goes back, Clay, to they're doing things, trying to get it fixed. And I know special teams has really been hammered on and talked about a lot the last 2 years. But what I saw last year was that when they would have a special teams mistake, for the most part, you give them a game and a half, and they got it fixed. And that certainly seems what they're trying to do again here with the, you know, the problem having the punts blocked.
Yeah, I get this feeling that we may see a three-man shield, which is what a lot of teams are doing, instead of the two-man shield. And you know, you can protect them a little better with three big guys back there to run through. It changes your coverage a little bit, but Bauer is hanging them up high enough that, you know, maybe you sacrifice that one man in coverage, you know, you're taking out a defensive back or slash linebacker to add another shield guy. You know, they've offset their punter this year, which is different. So they did change their scheme. I think you'll look to see a few more little tweaks. They've blocked a punt. So that's 2-1 for this season. Last year, I think it was 2-0. So maybe they've improved slightly. You know, they blocked one and had two blocked. But I will tell you, four block punts in 15 games is right at the throw up level. You know, what do you say? You know, when you're on that curvy road and you get nauseous for a long time, that's the way Arkansas fans are when they see the punt team come out.
Scotty, you and I talked about the other day, the kickoff returns, a couple of, you know, we thought it was questionable for AJ Green to bring it out on the opening kickoff. He took it at the one, got to the 17, Pittman was saying that they are comfortable with their return men returning anything a yard deep in the end zone or out of the end zone, basically anything out of the end zone. They're fine with them returning it. But he said what happened with Green on the opening kickoff is that the Georgia kicker was putting his kicks up so high that it allowed the Georgia protection team to get down or tackle team to get down. And they were already inside the 20 by the time he caught the ball. And so he told him, we want you to fair catch it the rest of the game. And then on the second kickoff, he dropped the fair catch. It just seemed like things kind of snowballed him.
Yeah, it really did. And Sam said one time that I think it was maybe on that AJ Green kickoff return that by the time the ball touched his hand, there were seven Georgia guys inside the 20 or 25 yard line. That's speed, man. That's unbelievable speed. And it's, you know, a good trick to have up your sleeve if you're a kicker too. You put enough air under it and let your athletes run down and make things happen and create some problems. But I'm perfectly fine with AJ Green, you know, being back returning kicks. I think he's, you know, he's an explosive kid. You know, he's had 10-3 speed, you know, when he was in high school in Tulsa. I think he's, you know, one of the guys that you most want back returning kicks, but at the same time, he's really young. First time he'd ever been in an environment like that, seeing speed that, you know, in your face, that overwhelming, it probably rattled him a little bit. I mean, it would have rattled me, you know, much worse than that. But I do think AJ needs to, I think AJ's going to be fine. Like, he's got speed to burn. He can make guys miss, you know, as we saw in that Texas A&M game when he caught the pass out of the backfield, made three guys miss. As long as he keeps his confidence level up, he can be, you know, he can be a weapon at kickoff return. It's just, you know, you got to have the wherewithal to know whether or not to bring the ball out. And that just comes, you know, with experience.
Yeah. You can fair catch it at the one, fair catch it at the 10 if you want to. If you can. And there was no question that that's Georgia went for that. That kicker can kick it out of the end zone, I was told by one of the Georgia staffers in the press box. And they've coached him just to put as much hang time as possible and make it come down at the goal line and dare the other team to run it back. Well, you just fair catch those. You don't have to be in the end zone to do that. And that's the coaching point, and that's I'm sure they've told that to a freshman, but it's just a little different. And again, all of that was happening right in front of the Georgia band, the Georgia student section, which was rowdy, and it's close to the field in that corner, and that's where everything bad happened for Arkansas. And it's just it's a learning experience for some of those players that haven't been in it before. You know, guys like Grant Morgan and Bumper Pool and Hayden Henry, they didn't have trouble with that, but there are some of those backs that, you know, it just rattled them a little bit. And, you know, it's the whole environment in getting, you know, stuff defensively that weighs on your mind. And you think, oh, I want to make a big play in a return game. Well, it just wasn't there against this team and against that coverage and against that height of a kickoff.
One other thing, like I really like I said, I like AJ Green back returning kicks and even Rocket Sanders to a degree too. I mean, he's another explosive player. But I feel like to this point in the season, we have rarely seen Arkansas bring a kickoff out and push the ball past the, you know, the 20 or 25 yard line. You know, at some point, you know, I would probably be perfectly okay with Arkansas just fair catching everything and you know, just starting with better field position than you would if you bring it out.
Yeah, I was looking at that stat just as you were speaking, and the only one that there's been is Ladarius Bishop. I think it was the play after he got beat deep. He returned to kickoff, I think, to the 42 or something like that. That was it. The rest of them have been painful to watch. You're right, Scotty.
The Whole Hog Football Podcast is brought to you by Bud Anderson Home Services. Visit them on the web at gocallbud.com.
Bud Anderson is proud to be the official heating and cooling provider for the Arkansas Razorbacks. This partnership will support all Razorback athletics for over 400 student athletes across 19 sports. Whoopee!
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast.
I think the biggest takeaway from me at Georgia was basically this, that when you are playing an elite football team, whether it be Alabama and Georgia of today, or you know, USC of the mid-2000s, or you know, you name it, I think in order to beat them, especially at their place or even to stay close, number one, you can't have them on top of their game. And number two, you probably have to play pretty close to a perfect game. And when it's flipped around and you're not on top of your game and they play a perfect game, that's when you have outcomes like you had Saturday against Georgia. Clay, the offense, you can chalk part of this up to, you know, Georgia's great defense in the middle of it, but it never looked to me like the offense was just really on top of its game. And it really started with the penalties, you know, the first two snaps, and it just never seemed like it was really all clicking for them.
Yeah, you made mistakes to start the game, and it gave Georgia a lot of confidence, and then they had the momentum, and you never turned it. You know, this is – I tend to – when I see something that doesn't make sense to me, sometimes I go back to my upbringing and the things that I learned about football from Frank Broyles, and I can remember him telling me I say telling me, it was probably telling my dad, and I was just sitting in the back seat of the car. I think we were going to the KATB studios on a Sunday morning to tape his TV show. And Arkansas had played poorly in the game the night before. And Coach Broyles told my dad, and this was back in a 10-game schedule. So now fast forward to a 12-game schedule. But he says, you get your stinger out, and you play at your top level two or three times a year. Now that's in a 10-game schedule. Now you got 12 games. So let's add one to it. So you can play at your peak maybe three, four times a year. And he said, then there's three games maybe that you just don't have it. And you hope those are against teams that, you know, are subpar talent, and you can kind of muddle through those. And then there's a bunch of other games that fall in the middle where you got a little something and you play decent and you're able to win. But he said, if you have one of those clunker games against a top team, you're in trouble. And he said, you just can't get up every week. And you just think Arkansas really was at a peak for Texas. They were really at a peak for Texas A&M. They just kind of muddled through, you know, Rice and Georgia Southern. But this one was the clunker, and you just have to check it off. This is one of the two, three games that they didn't have it, and you do that against the top team, and you're gonna struggle. And I think, hey, it's like the Ted Lasso show, be a goldfish. Forget this one. It was a clunker. You know, go on and get ready for Ole Miss. And I think that's the coaches are not gonna ignore problems. They're going to try to fix them, but they're also going to understand that they're going to get a little more enthusiasm, a little more energy this week than they did last week.
Scotty, one of the things that, you know, Pittman said that they're learning is how to get ready for an 11 a.m. game. And they're going to have to figure this out, because not only do they have Georgia, they've got Ole Miss at 11 this week on the road. And then their first game back in Fayetteville in 4 or 5 weeks is going to be an 11 a.m. kickoff against Auburn.
Yeah, it's tough. It kind of feels like a couple of years ago, you know, when it felt like Arkansas played nothing but 11 a.m. games. But it's a different Arkansas team. And You know, I think Clay's exactly right. You just got to flush last week. And, you know, there are lessons obviously to be learned from it, in terms of being, you know, just physical for a full 60, mean for a full 60, and just playing hard. Like, one of the things that kind of jumped out to me about Georgia the other day was their offensive linemen, the way that they finished plays when they turned around and handed the ball off, and the offensive linemen would carry guys down the field. They would push their running backs like an extra 6 or 7 yards downfield. And then they would, when the whistle was blown, they'd celebrate like they'd scored a touchdown. Like, Arkansas has got to get to that energy level somehow at an 11 a.m. game the next few weeks. And, you know, I think Sam does a good job of getting his guys' attention, and they've probably already turned the page, and they're, you know, licking their wounds, getting really healthy again. And I wouldn't be surprised if Arkansas came out, you know, hyper-focused against Ole Miss. That's just kind of the way that I see this coaching staff handling this roster. They're not going to let them dwell on, you know, mistakes that they've made. You just got to, like Sam said, you got to kind of, when you get knocked down, dust the dirt off. And I really like the 11 a.m. kicks as selfishly as a beat writer. I know the fans don't necessarily like it. But I think it gives Arkansas a really good opportunity to, you know, to play well on the road, you know, when a crowd might not be as hyped up and rowdy as Georgia. I think Arkansas has got a good shot to go in and play well.
The 11 a.m. games, not all 11 a.m. games are the same. Let me put it that way. When you're playing the 11 a.m. games a few years ago, they were not in the primetime positions. Like it or not, 11 a.m. on ESPN is a primetime position. I'm looking through ratings right now. 3.8 million people watched the Georgia game. That's the highest or the most watched game this year on cable. And so I think, Clay, it's one of those deals where I don't think Arkansas is good enough to necessarily be in the primetime position yet, but they're good enough to be in what are still desirable television slots for these networks.
I'm not sure that they're America's team, but they're at least in America's back pocket. So we're getting some views from, you know, a darling of the college football. There's a lot of interest in Arkansas this year because of where they've been. And I think there's some fascination with the way they play. A team plays hard, throws the ball deep. They're fun to watch. And they've gotten a lot of extra time on all these shows of people trying to explain why Arkansas is subtly decent. And it's people want to see. And it's I know that the whole state of Arkansas will be watching. They've captured the state of Arkansas, so that's helped with some TVs. I don't think it's 3 million, but you know, it's a nice phenomena to see when Arkansas is suddenly relevant again, and they are.
It's been interesting kind of listening the last few days to kind of the national reaction to this game. And, you know, I don't know that Arkansas was necessarily actually the number 8 team in the country, like if they're that good yet, but there are some people that have just like, they saw Arkansas get blown out at Georgia and they're like, oh well, it's just kind of Arkansas, you know, like of a few years ago. But I just don't think that's the case. And I think Saturday, if Arkansas goes out and shows well, that could, you know, maybe change the narrative and the feel toward Arkansas as a whole. You know, that, you know, they lose to a superior team. Georgia's no doubt a superior team, but they can come back and they can, you know, they can bounce back and compete against a quality SEC team. It's been kind of weird when we're up close, we can tell that Arkansas is clearly not the same team of a couple of years ago. But, you know, some people that cover the sport nationally see a 37-0 score and there's like, well, Arkansas's, you know, they're not who we thought they were, but Arkansas is still a really good football team and they compete well at Ole Miss on Saturday. I think everybody's going to realize just how improved they are.
You know what this reminds me of is 2011. Remember when Alabama and LSU, they met in that game of the century in 2011, and then they played again in the national championship. It was so evident that year that they were so far ahead of the rest of the SEC. Arkansas had a good team that year and they lost to Alabama and LSU by 24 points apiece in those two games. I don't know if you have an Arkansas 2011 type team in the SEC this year, as far as, you know, the third best team in the conference. It just seems to me like Alabama and Georgia are going to do this to a lot of opponents. It wouldn't surprise me to see Georgia do this, you know, again this weekend whenever Auburn plays them.
Yeah, I think the critical thing to watch, and those are good points, Matt, is where's the health of the team? Where's the mind of the team and how they go forward? And it's like, how many of their top players do they have for the second half of the season? And I don't think they're going to give up the rope. I think they're going to keep playing for these coaches. If they don't lose players, and so far they've lost Dorian Gerald, and that's pretty much it. And, you know, a few bumps and bruises here that cause a guy to be hobbled for a game. But if they, you know, if they keep KJ and they keep Treylon Burks, they, you know, Treylon Smith, you know, I think they realize, hey, we're not going to get him hurt in this game. They got their, you know, their stars, and they're building depth in the offensive line. I think that's what we're going to see this week, is to try to find more players up front that can make a difference. You know, I think that they're building depth in the secondary. Hudson Clark's playing a little bit more. If they have all their weapons and they're still healthy, they'll make a nice run the second half of the season. And they haven't done anything to harm their ability to play in a big bowl game and, you know, have the extra practices and just, you know, and recruiting is going well. So it's been a good start to the season, 4-1 ranked. I don't think anybody would have been disappointed if you told them that's where they were and that they have a chance to go play a big game at Ole Miss.
Biggest question mark coming out of last weekend was, is KJ Jefferson going to be, you know, is he healthy enough? And I think that's why they pulled him out when they did let Malik Hornsby get some reps. And then Sam on Monday said that he thinks KJ's absolutely 100%. So that's a really encouraging sign going into a game that's basically, you know, going to be a homecoming for him. He's going to be pretty amped up for that.
We'll preview the Arkansas-Ole Miss game later this week, a little bit more in depth. But before we get out of here, one thought as we go into Ole Miss game week. These are two of the most penalized teams in the country. Ole Miss is the second most penalized team in college football. Arkansas is the seventh most penalized team, and they're the two most penalized teams in the SEC. For Arkansas to be penalized like this, I think it's got to be driving Sam Pittman crazy, because he just seems like the coach that does not let that slide. On Saturday, that was the second time this year that they've had 13 penalties, 13 for 101 Saturday against Georgia. Clay and I counted that there were six other flags that were thrown in that game that were either declined or offset. They were flagged 13 times against Rice for 117 yards. This just doesn't seem like it's part of the Pittman DNA, Clay, for a team to be penalized like this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he kind of was frustrated on really what to say when he was asked about the penalty Saturday. It had a few little cuss words thrown in there. It's like, hell, I don't know. I'm the coach. I got to fix it. You know, something like that. I thought it was interesting that Jason Autry was the crew, and that's the same crew that had the Arkansas-Auburn game, and they were embarrassed by the way they misadministrated the end of that game. And those guys wanted to make sure they called everything they saw against Arkansas. Now, every penalty that I saw them call, when I watched the replay, I was like, yeah, I can see that. It wasn't anything where they were making things up, but by golly, they didn't miss any of those penalties, you know. So I don't think Arkansas will be unhappy if they don't see Jason Autry the rest of the year.
And Grant Morgan said that there was one time that Autry told him that they could have thrown another flag on a play. And I think it might have been on one of those plays where they had, you know, two or three flags thrown on the same play. And, you know, games like that tend to get a little sloppy toward the end. And I thought that was the case for the Razorbacks on Saturday. Penalties, I think, are going to be a huge, huge factor in this Arkansas-Ole Miss game. Which team can play with more discipline and which team can basically flush last week better? I think if you can get a team that can do both of those, that's going to be the team that has the best chance to win. As we said, we'll be back later this week with a preview of the Arkansas-Ole Miss game that kicks off at 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. Until then, visit us at wholehogsports.com for all of our Razorback football coverage. For Clay Henry and Scotty Bordelon, I'm Matt Jones. Thanks for joining us.
The proceeding has been a production of wholehogsports.com. Look for our latest podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store.
And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.